The Prime Minister of Great Britain first came to my attention bottom up. Literally, it was those gorgeous leopard skin kitten heels she wore. A tall, striking, seemingly intelligent woman. She is now in command of our country, which is going through the biggest upheaval since the Second World War. She was called a bloody difficult woman by Ken Clark, and she replied by saying politics could do with some bloody difficult women. She is Theresa May. Today, Rose Prince, who's written the latest and only biography of the PM, and it's called Theresa May, the Enigmatic Prime Minister, she's on today on Radio Gorgeous. She's a journalist. She has also written Comrade Corbyn, and I'm talking to her by Skype in the US, where until recently she was the Telegraph's US correspondent, but now she's a freelance journalist and writer with two children. Hi, welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Absolute pleasure. So we're apolitical at Radio Gorgeous. We don't like to take sides, so nor do you, obviously, writing these two different books. So today this interview will be politics neutral. What I want to know is all about Theresa May's inside and out. From your book, I don't believe she's a difficult woman at all. She seems very fair, hearing all sides of the argument and then slowly coming to a conclusion.
I think that's right. I mean, I think that if somebody else's conclusion is difficult from hers, she can perhaps be a bit bloody difficult. I think she's quite fair and balanced, and she's willing to listen to other people's opinions. What she really hates, and I kind of think this is fair enough, is when people are rude to her or take her for granted or underestimate her. Perhaps in a man, that would be called being strong. But because she's a woman, it seems to be a black mark against her. And all her cabinet colleagues said, oh, she's so difficult. I like to think of her as just quite a strong, formidable person in a good way.
Excellent. So let's go back to the hour and a half that she knew she was PM, and she showed remarkable self-control. That's right at the beginning of the book.
That's right, yeah. That was one of the most interesting things I found out about Theresa May when I was doing my research. So I did decide to open the book with it because I thought it spoke a lot about her personality. If you remember back to the Tory leadership election last year, she was up against Andrea Leadsom in the final two. And Andrea Leadsom decided to pull out of the contest because she had said some quite mean things about Theresa May not having children. There'd been a big backlash against her, and Andrea Leadsom just decided to give up. She phoned Theresa May on the telephone, on her mobile phone, and said, right, I'm pulling out of the race, but could you keep it to yourself, please? Because I'd like to announce it publicly, but I just want to give you a heads up. Theresa May at the time was at the launch of her campaign, and she had a big speech to give and some question and answers with journalists. She was in the room at the time she took the call with her husband and Liam Fox, who's now in her cabinet and is a friend of hers. She didn't tell either of them. She didn't tell any of her advisors. She didn't mention it on the stage. She didn't mention it to all the journalists giving her a hard time in a question and answer session. She didn't even let slip by messing up her tenses. She didn't say, when I'm Prime Minister. She was still saying, if I am elected Prime Minister. And the reason was, she wanted to keep her word. She had said to Andrea Leadsom she wouldn't tell anyone. And so she didn't. Even her husband, who, as you'll find out if you read the whole book, is the closest person to her in the world. She didn't say anything to him at all. She kept it all to herself. And I just thought that said so much about what a controlled person she is. I think that's the main thing I discovered from my research. She is a woman with an enormous self-control.
And that's a very powerful tool. So who were her parents?
Her parents were really interesting people. Her father was a vicar. He was a Church of England vicar, but he came from the Anglo-Catholic tradition. So he was almost like a priest, really, almost like a Catholic priest. And her mother was a woman from a working, I would say lower middle class, working class family, as her father was. She was from Reading, he was from South London, and they met not long after the war. She was an Anglo-Catholic as well. And they moved first to Eastbourne and then to a very pretty village in Oxfordshire, and he was the local vicar and she was the supportive vicar's wife. They didn't have any other children, so it was quite a quiet, stable, bit solitary childhood, which was very much at the service of other people.
So she comes from a humble background, And why serving in her blood? Can you tell me more about further back in her ancestry?
Well, her family were, yes, not, I guess her parents weren't all that humble. I mean, by the time she came along, they were middle class, they were reasonably well off. But her, going back generations before that, they really weren't. They were quite working class. There were servants who served in her background. Both of her grandmothers had been servants.
I think we've all got relations that are servants. I've got some.
Probably. They were mostly from the south of England, although one great-grandfather went back to Scotland. And they were people who worked hard, who did their best. The women were teachers, and one was a dressmaker. The men were largely builders. Her grandfather was a soldier. He served again in the First World War. And just running through it, I felt, was quite a long tradition of doing one's best and looking out for other people. As you know, at the moment, Theresa May likes to talk about helping the just about managing class. I think that's where her family background lies. Maybe that's why she chooses to take that path.
And they're also a very big part of English, ain't the English. So Theresa Brazier, I hope I pronounced it right, was born on October the 1st, 1957. I've looked up at her astrological birthday, and it describes her as dedicated, stylish and original, which I thought was quite interesting.
Wow, I never knew that. I'm not really an astronomer. What star sign is she then?
She's Libra, and she's born on the 1st day of October, and Margaret Thatcher was a Libra as well. They're very, very good at dealing with war, Librans, because they can see both sides, and they're really good at arguing, and they also are people. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Maybe that'll help us with Brexit then.
Yeah, bloody hell. Then it said also the dark side of her personality, and I don't know whether you touched on this, was obsessive, intimidating and isolated.
That's quite uncanny, because she's definitely all of those things. When she was Home Secretary in particular, her colleagues sort of had this image of her holed up at the Home Office, squirreling away into the dead of night, working really, really hard and ferocious with anyone who came up against her and hadn't done their homework. I think her civil servants found her quite intimidating, and there till all hours, keeping us safe, doing the best she could for us, but also not suffering fools gladly. I think that would be something that most people who came across her would say.
Now, she didn't have children. I mean, it must help, as we know, because we've got children, both of us. But if you don't have them, you can put your energy somewhere else. That must have helped with her drive, don't you think?
Oh, I'm sure it did, yeah, because having kids is a big distraction. She wanted children. It wasn't by choice. And sadly, she's from that generation where if you struggle, then there wasn't much that could be done. I mean, these days, people would go down the IVF route, and there were other options. But for her, it was just a sadness in her life. I mean, she likes to say that people shouldn't feel sorry for her, that there are plenty of people in her position, and that she has a very rich, full life. And it's true, she's got a very loving husband, she's got friends, she's got nephews and nieces and godparents. But particularly for her, I think, because her parents died young, it meant her family circle was very small. It really was just her and her husband, Philip. So I think that was something that was not so much a cross to bear, but perhaps just an ever-present sorrow.
Exactly. So as she was an only child, in your book it said that she used to go to church and the mother and father, they would suddenly burst out in a hymn together. I love this image.
Yes, I like that image too. She spoke about that once, of how she and her parents, if it was quiet in the church, if they were there, I don't know, cleaning it or changing the flowers, if they were moved, they would sink to their knees and sing a hymn together. Again, that's that sort of Anglo-Catholic tradition, which is quite demonstrative. I think I felt that she had rather changed, slightly recalibrated her religion. I think she's now more a traditional Tory Church of England, stiff upper lip Christian. Perhaps that's to do with also her upbringing. I mean, her parents did come from quite poor areas where she was always very comfortable, very middle class. So I think she's more of a conservative with a small C in all areas of her life, perhaps, than her parents.
So, yes, do you think it is a core value inside her religion, do you think? I mean, that's where she comes from.
I think it is very important to her, but she's not evangelical about it. She's not like one of these American politicians who talk about their faith in God all the time and bang on about it constantly. I think hers is quite a quiet faith, so she doesn't feel all that comfortable. It's quite British, isn't it? She doesn't really talk about it too much. She's guided by it, and she goes to church every Sunday, and the Church of England is important to her, but she's not going to push it down people's throats.
As we know, Theresa May is very interested in schooling in the UK. And can you tell us about her childhood? Why did, you know, because she said she's had a broad experience of schooling. Can you tell us how and why?
Yeah, it's quite fascinating. Hers is a very broad experience of education, in that she's pretty much been in every sector. So she started out at her local primary school. It was a tiny school with just barely a dozen kids of all ages going there, and she had nice memories of the teacher buying them all an ice cream from the ice cream truck. I mean, you couldn't have done that at my London primary school because there'd be not enough ice cream to go around, but there were so few of them. For secondary school, she first of all went to a private school, a convent school. Interesting again that her father, a Church of England vicar, would choose a Catholic convent, but I guess that speaks to his
high
interest
church
in high church, exactly. And then when he was moved to a different vicarage a few miles away, she was near a very good grammar school, so he took her out of private school after 2 years, and she went to the grammar school, which she passed the entrance exam to get into. And then, a fascinating time in school's history, it actually became a comprehensive. It was during that period of the Labour government where grammar schools were converting into comprehensive schools, so then she went to a comprehensive. So she likes to say she has experience of all three sectors. I say she likes to say, in her past, when she first was an MP, she actually didn't used to refer to the fact she'd been to private school, but she was outed by sneaky journalists, not me, but like me, and now she has to fess up that she also went to private school.
Great. Now, she must have it must have become co-ed, the school, as well. So how did she handle boys, do you know?
Well, apparently she didn't really have to handle the boys too much, because it was such an upheaval going from a grammar school to a comprehensive. They did it quite gradually, so because she was one of the older kids, they just kept her on her same path, and she didn't have to mix with the boys very much. She just stayed on and went to the sixth form, and it was very much as it had been. The only thing that did happen that I thought was quite funny was that at one stage, the boys at the school were invited to go on a class outing to a rugby match. And Theresa May is actually quite interested in sport. She is a big fan of cricket, and she liked to go horse racing. And apparently she was rather took umbrage at the fact that the boys were getting to go to this rugby match and she wasn't. So she complained to her dad, and her dad, the vicar, went up to the school, had a word with the headmaster, and lo and behold, young Theresa Brazier was off to the rugby match too.
Now, that's her personality, isn't it? She never, ever sees her sex as a way of stopping her do something.
Yeah, absolutely. And she just sees she describes herself as a feminist, which is a big step for a conservative. If you remember, David Cameron was asked if he was a feminist, and he declined to say that he was. She's quite proud of saying she's a feminist.
Great.
Her form of feminism is very much about equality. So she doesn't believe in special favours for women. She was very opposed to the all-women shortlists that Labour introduced. She likes to say that she wants a level playing field, and that's why she founded this organisation called Women to Win, which helps conservative women get selected to become MPs. And she said it was because men have all the privileges of a networking behind them. They have finance, they have the kind of old boys club. There used to be a tradition where male Tory candidates would go off and play golf together, or go sit in the bar and have a cigar together. Mm-hmm. And she felt that gave them a head start. So rather than giving women a head start, what she really wanted to do was to make everyone equal. And I think that's her approach to her politics more generally. I think she believes in equality rather than special favours. I mean, Labour would say that doesn't go far enough, but it's a characteristic of her approach.
Now, Women to Win, didn't that help her do well in politics?
Well, mainly it brought in a lot more women into the Tory party, which in a roundabout way, I guess, helped her, because she wasn't isolated anymore. She was very much a fish out of water when she got to Parliament. There were only 13 female Tory MPs, which seems astonishing. There were a few more women MPs because it was that Labour landslide where there were over 100. But it must have been quite an isolating experience still for her to be on those opposition benches and just look around and see no women. So she really threw herself into Women to Win, and they don't directly help her, but I think it has helped change Parliament, and I think Parliament is very much a place she feels more comfortable as a result.
It's a brilliant thing. What was I going to say? I've lost it now. When did she have her first political awakening?
Well, her friends and family say that she was into politics right from the get-go. From the age of 12, she told her family she wanted to be an MP, and her friends at university remember her saying she wanted to be the first female Prime Minister. And then a few years later, Margaret Thatcher obviously became the first female Prime Minister, and she was rather ticked off about that. I think it was an early interest. Because she was an only child, because her parents were quite serious, they were a little older than many parents in that generation. They used to talk to her about current affairs and really treated her like an adult from when she was very young. So that interest, I think, began early. She joined her local Conservative Party as a teenager. Her father told her that it wouldn't be right for her to be too overt in that, because he was worried that the parishioners, perhaps they were Labour Party, perhaps they were Liberal, they might be a bit put off if the vicar's daughter was going around, you know, with a big blue rosette on her. So he said, look, can you keep it low key? So she used to stuff envelopes in a back room at the Tory Association. But once she got to university, she could join the Conservative Association. She joined the Oxford Union and spoke on behalf of the Conservatives. So it was an interest that she had very early on.
Were her parents Conservative?
I think her parents were not as full-blooded in their conservatism. As she was. I think they weren't particularly political people. I think they probably weren't Labour, they weren't socialist. I don't presume to know how they voted, but she has said that they definitely weren't as involved as she would go on to be.
Now, how popular was she as a person, as a young person? You know, she sounds like she wasn't much fun by everything you've said so far.
I don't think she was much fun, no. Some of her school friends remember her as being very serious, very hardworking, very interested in getting her homework in on time.
Oh, not goody much goody. Laugh. Yeah.
she always liked the fashion. That's something she had was quite something that suggests a more light-hearted side to her somewhere.
Yeah, she worked in a bakery, didn't she, and spent all her money on clothes. And she bought her first pair of outrageous shoes. Can you tell us what they were?
Gosh, now
you know what they were. I remember very well. Lime green platforms.
Oh,
well, I'm obsessed by clothes, so
that's embarrassing. You can tell I'm not, can't you?
Yeah. So I was really impressed, you know. So she does have that slight vanity, though. I mean, that, you know, a fun vanity, you know, because clothes are a little bit of vanity, which probably helps her ego. But I also think her clothes have really helped her politically, because she's they've given her confidence, and they've been talked about. She was so clever wearing different shoes, because it was the first thing I noticed. It has put her on the map. It has made her more of a talking point, but not in a negative way. You know, she's not wearing low-cut tops or something. I think she's a very clever woman with fashion, and also she's got great fashion. You know, she wears Vivienne Westwood, she wears Jill Sander, she wears really good clothes.
Yeah, I mean, she does also wear low-cut tops, actually.
Does she?
Caused a bit quite recently at a budget. I think it was even George Osborne's last budget, or perhaps the one before. She wore this really low-cut top, and everyone, I think she made it on the front page of The Sun, and no one was talking about the budget. Everyone was talking about Theresa May's cleavage. So
well, she is. Also, the first time became a Conservative MP, she wore a black leather skirt. And I thought that was really interesting, because apparently the women hated it, but the men loved it. And she knew she had to win over the men. So she is clever in the way that she will wear something. I mean, that's, you know, black leather skirt's quite suggestive, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this interest in fashion does date back to her teenage years, and she just always loved it. So I don't think it was particularly calculated, but then along the way she realised that actually it was quite beneficial, and that she could win people over with her look and get herself noticed. And also, she's quite, in a funny way, even though she does wear these flamboyant clothes, she's quite a shy person. So if people are talking about her clothes, it means she's not scrutinised for other aspects of her personality or background or maybe she doesn't want to talk about.
She has said that she hates her nose, but don't we all hate our noses?
I hate my nose, but yeah, exactly. Her nose is perfectly fine, as far as I can see.
Now, she went to Oxford, and she, same person, diligent, careful, not that brilliant, but this is where she met the love of her life. Can you tell us? Because apparently the most wonderful thing was he made her laugh.
Philip. Yes, they really do seem to be kindred spirits. She was introduced, of all people, by Benazir Bhutto, the former president and prime minister of Pakistan.
Who was a glam queen then, wasn't she? Glam.
Was a complete glam queen. Mm. And they were all at the Conservative Association annual disco. And Philip May walked across the room and Benazir dragged him over and introduced them, and their eyes met, and they've been very much in love ever since. Excuse me, tickling my throat.
Everybody's got a cough. Everyone I've interviewed today has been coughing and spluttering, don't worry. So tell us about Philip. I mean, to me, he sounds like he's had a really, kind of quite a staid, boring career. I mean, I think City is quite dull. Is he interesting?
He's not going to set the world on fire, according to some of the people I've interviewed. They nearly all said exactly the same thing, which is he's a really nice guy. He's very bright. He's interested in politics. He's not deeply exciting, but you know what? Maybe she doesn't need that, and maybe the country doesn't need that in a politician's spouse. He's very supportive. He goes with her to all the functions. He's prepared to give up his Saturdays to walk in the rain and knock on doors on her behalf. They spend a lot of time together. She didn't really socialise with her fellow MPs in the Commons, which they all thought was completely outrageous. Rather than going for a drink with them when there were late votes at the Commons, she would go and have supper with him. He would come to the House of Commons and they would go to one of the dining rooms and just have dinner together, which I thought was quite sweet.
It's sweet. They really are in love.
I think they are. And more than that, he does act as a real touchstone for her politics. So she would always practice her conference speeches on him, and she would always act on his advice. And she did discuss politics with him and find him very helpful. She's someone who notoriously doesn't trust many people when it comes to advice. She has two very close advisors, and Philip is an unofficial third advisor, and that's about it for her in the circle. So he really is incredibly important to her. People compare him to Dennis Thatcher. I think he's actually probably more important to Theresa May than Dennis Thatcher was to Margaret Thatcher, because he seems a little bit brighter, maybe a little bit more switched on to politics, a little bit more present in all aspects of her life.
Exactly. Now tell us about her cooking, because that was one of the things I read about that I found interesting.
Another of the things, I think, along with the clothes that she likes to talk about in interviews, because then she can get away with not answering any more personal questions. So she is a good cook. She has apparently a big collection of cookbooks. She always says that she doesn't like Nigella because she's too prescriptive, but she likes Ottolenghi and she likes Jamie Oliver. I think recently she said she was asked what she would cook for Donald Trump if he came to dinner, and she said, "Oh, I'd make him a lamb shank." apparently she likes to relax by cooking, and Philip does the washing up. Sounds pretty good to me.
Sounds brilliant. So Theresa's got a massive job on her hands. How do you think she will handle Brexit?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm not a soothsayer. Several people said to me that it was a huge task, and if anyone could do it, that she can. I mean, I think she is an impressive politician. I'm sure she'll do very well. One thing that she used to do in cabinet was, if she disagreed with someone, she just wouldn't give way. So there was no compromise. She'd just say no. and people would have to do it her way. I'm not sure how well that will work on the negotiation table. I mean, it might be a great negotiating strategy. Perhaps she'll just say no and everyone will come round to the way she wants it.
Not sure, actually.
Yeah. We'll see.
I think actually she might have to change. So, Rosa, you wrote the book and got to know Teresa writing it. Is she enigmatic, as you say, and do you feel like you know her now?
I kind of do feel like I know her. Maybe I'm kidding myself, but I sort of do. And I think she's less enigmatic than perhaps she appears. I set out to write it just because we did know so little about her, and in some ways she was quite contradictory, but I think she's only enigmatic in the sense that she's quite self-effacing and quiet. Most politicians shout about themselves and you know exactly what they're like, and she was never like that. She was quite withdrawn and liked to keep to herself. And I think maybe she's less enigmatic, despite the title of my book, than she is just straightforwardly low-key, if that's a word. I think she just likes to get on with the job and leave others to shout about their achievements. She's kind of the anti-Boris Johnson, isn't she?
Exactly. Theresa May, The Enigmatic Prime Minister by Rosa Prince, is published by Biteback. Thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.